And welcome to Encore. Encore is Near FM's Highlights of the Week programme. And on this week's edition, Ogo talks with Rose Ubanefo on Lifeline about childcare for those in education and work. Padraig Bannon, manager of the Ballark Community Centre, talks about the history of the centre with Donny Tarrant on Northside Today. And finally, Tony Fitzsimons is joined by Miriam Gormley and Owen Rice, Trokra's head of communications, and they discuss this year's Trokra Appeal. First up today, it's Ogo on Lifeline.
I have another guest on the phone. Her name is Rose Ubanefo. She's currently undergoing her PhD research. I tell you, this woman is a scholar. You know, she's read so many things and now she's doing her PhD. And we often tease her and say, girlfriend, don't you think it's time you start thinking about doing your professorship or whatever? So today she's going to be talking to us about issues that affect her, particularly as a woman and also as a migrant woman, and just general issues that affect women. As today we celebrate and mark the International Women's Day with the hashtag Be Bold for Change. So good morning, Rosemary.
Oh, good morning. Good morning, Wabogo.
Yeah. So how are you today?
Very well, thank you. And I'm happy to be here on this program.
Yeah, okay.
So, in relation to what you said, I mean, globally, women, we've always been saddled with the, with the role of multitasking.
Okay.
Obviously, the home, you're so involved with the home and, looking after the kids. And as well, having to work. Now, obviously, this would be this would be very different from probably many years ago, say about 20, 30 decades ago. But now the world is changing now. So you've seen women being more involved. And obviously, like I said, it's a global thing. So women everywhere in Nigeria, here in the Western world, we all find ourselves being saddled with that, with that responsibility. So personally speaking, I would have some experience, and I think many migrant women would have that same sort of experience as well. Now, coming here, leaving your home and coming here, many of us, we're here basically as single parents. Now, when I say single parents, I would refer mostly to geographical separation.
Okay.
So now you find out that you're actually doing both roles now, so you're playing the father, you're playing the mother,
mm-hmm.
To your children, and as well, you're trying to improve yourself, you're trying to empower yourself, you're trying to study more, you're trying to get into the workforce, and again, now, like I said, we're here as single parents now. Back in Africa, you'd have probably a better support system.
Mm-hmm.
Probably you'd have your mother having to help you, your cousins, or your relatives or whatever. But I mean, you'd have even a better support system. But here, you're all alone. You haven't got your family here with you. So you'd have to figure it out yourself, how you're going to sort out the kids and still go to school, or how you sort out the kids and still have to go to work. Yeah, exactly. And now, what I have noticed is that most times that because the women are not able to deal with this, that's why you find out that many women, they stay back at home, trying to help, trying to, work with the kids, and they end up not working.
Right.
And yeah, but in the long run now, it doesn't make them happy, but
yeah.
It just sometimes they really don't have a choice. And it's worse when you have a child with special needs. I've got a child with special needs. Now, when I came into the country, I was in school. I was in a postgraduate study, and I was working in ECOM at that time. Now, I was there until 2014, when my child was diagnosed. Now, it was difficult to get anybody to mind my child.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what was I supposed to do? Obviously, I had to stop work for some time. Well, I had to stop work. And I decided to do something on my own. But again, that's what I'm saying. So women, we do need, we do need lots of more support, in able to, to help us fit better into the society.
Yeah, so like from what I gather, you're saying one of the most basic issue now, a major issue, is childcare, which so many women have brought up.
Absolutely.
Though, yeah, whether you're migrant or you're Irish, it's an issue.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. It is the same. It is the same for all women. Yeah, and you know that was why when I started, I said globally. So it's a global thing. Mm. You know, I mean, no matter how the society it's changing, no matter how the society is evolving, women would always have that dual role of being the homemaker and also, obviously, working in the society. Mm. So it's childcare that would be a major thing, yeah, for the women.
Because sometimes when you look at the issue of childcare, and sometimes some, you know, they look at their wages, they are working to pay a childminder.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Yes, that's what it is. You know, because if you think of it now, if a woman is spending about 400 euros, for example, in a month, mm-hmm, okay, just to pay for one child. Now, I mean, I'm just saying this for a woman that's got just one child, which most of us, we do have more than one. We would have three, four.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're spending 400 a month just for childcare for a child, one child. And in the long run, you're earning about 1,000 euros.
Yeah.
Okay, now you have to pay this for three children or for two children. So sometimes you're saying to yourself, does it really make sense? So it's childcare. Yes, childcare is the number one issue.
Yeah, and then for
number one issue.
Yeah, for migrant women, childcare, and then support. Like for me, you know, I feel support from family. I don't have family here. You know, unlike where we come from, that our families are there, you can easily say to your mom, oh, mom, I'm traveling, can you come and stay? Or my aunt is here, can aunt come and stay? Or my husband's mother come and stay? But here, you don't have that support.
No, we don't.
Yeah.
No, we don't. Mm. No, we don't.
So what? So what advice would you like to give to other women out there that have peculiar issues with you? Because you said something like you had to give up your work, and sometimes some of us or some of them they really like to work, but when they check their outgoings to what's coming in, it doesn't add up. So they rather prefer to stay home. So what would you like to? What advice? Or what of encouragement would you like to give to those women out there?
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that question. But the first thing I'd like to say as the society, you know, mm-hmm, being able to recognize this. Now, you know, I'm going to digress a bit. Now, you know, I said to you, I'm doing a research, and mm-hmm, my research is about the work-life balance of women. You know, women generally now,
okay,
women that work. Now, okay, and from my research now, I've actually found out that there are some companies that actually offer childcare arrangement, for the staff. And Addison Lee would be a typical example. Now, and they have an on-site.
Sorry, place, where?
Now, where the mother...
You called it...
Addison Lee.
What's
that? Addison Lee. That would be... It's the name of a company.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so basically now, you know, what they do is that they offer on-site care where the mothers or the fathers or whoever, you know, can bring their children, mm-hmm, to work, you know, and you know, the children are there while, while the parents are working. And, you know, and again now, they have also said that productivity in these companies have increased because the parents are working under a relaxed environment. So basically, the first thing would be for the society to recognize this. You know, the society, they have to be more... So when I say society, I mean the organizations, the companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have to be more supportive, you know, towards, you know, the plight of these mothers. So that would be the first thing. And then secondly, well, now, not all of us would be lucky to get jobs in such places,
mm-hmm,
or at the same time, now, all organizations might not buy into that, in as much as it is recommended that they do. But if you don't find yourself, if you're not lucky to find yourself in such an establishment, well, now, you can think about going, becoming an entrepreneur yourself. You know,
mm-hmm,
you can think about things to do. Now, there are some jobs that could be done online. you know, there are some deals that could be done online. So, I mean, you just try and empower yourself, and as well, get an education. When I say education, now I don't necessarily mean doing a postgraduate study, no. But what I'm saying, I mean, try to build on your skills. Because right now, this could just be like a preparatory ground for you while the kids are growing. But trust me, in the next 5-6 years, when the children leave home, you want to do something. You know, you want to do something for yourself. So now all the skills that you have acquired while you were training the kids, you'll find that you'll be able to, empower yourself. You'll be able to do something better for yourself as well. You know, so basically it's a tough one, but, you know, only the tough gets going. Mm-hmm. So you just keep doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you so much, yeah?
Thank you very much, Mwabogo.
Yeah, I know I put you on the spot, but I'm glad I got you there.
That's okay. Oh, yes, that's okay. I mean, happy International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Have a good day yourself. Yeah.
And that was Ogo on this week's Lifeline. Next up, Padraig Bannon, manager of the Ballarc Community Centre, discusses the history of the centre with Donny Tarrant on Northside Today.
Now, on the line, I have Padraig Bannon, manager of the Ballarc Community Centre. Good morning, Padraig, and welcome to Northside Today.
Good morning, Donny. How are you?
I am very well. I'm very well. So what could be wrong with me on a morning like this? Padraig, can you give us a little brief pocketbook history of the Ballarc Community Centre, please?
The Ballarc Community Training Centre was set up nearly 40 years ago. And it's set up in the local community between Ballymun and Lark Hill. And that's where the name comes from, Ballarc. It's a combination of Ballymun and Lark Hill. And what we are is a kind of a second chance education. We deliver certification, QQI certification at level 3 and level 4, which would be equivalent to junior cert, leaving cert. But we apply a kind of vocational training, and we're slightly different to school. We have a 10-to-1 ratio, and we'd have like woodwork, catering, digital media. We're opening we've a pre-apprenticeship program that's starting now at the end of this month. We've retail sales. Communications, which would be the equivalent of English. So students might do 9 awards, and which would lead to a major award equivalent to 9 subjects in the Leaving Cert, leading to a Leaving Cert. And what we do is we have a different approach. We're all on first names. There's no Mr. This or Mr. That. And, you know, we do a lot of ancillary subjects as well. Like we have a boxer-sized class. We play in a football league, we have a football course, we have a gym downstairs. We do a lot of soft skills as well. A lot of the students we deal with where they've fallen out of school for whatever reasons, it didn't suit them, bullying, you know, just found it very difficult to settle into a room of 32 people. So when they come to us, they find the atmosphere a better fit for them, you know, and what we'd find after a period of time, they start achieving. And we've had loads of success stories down through the years. We've had a lot of our students have left, gone on to do degrees. One of our students is currently an instructor himself with a degree in training and education over the Liberties. And, you know, we've had huge success stories down through the years. And we've moved on. We're located in the heart of kind of Ballymun, just on the outskirts in Santry, Shannon Road and Santry. And our client base has grown. We've gone from 40 to 60 currently. We're at now, and we're in Shannon House in Santry.
And Padraig, the age profile, is it open to all ages, or are you specifically catering to a certain age group?
We used to cater for kind of 15 to 21, but now we're 16 to 24. Now, so we're kind of the more adult age level. Yeah, 16, 17, we'd have a lot of them, but our main profile would be kind of the 18 to 21. And we work very closely with our local Intrio office in Ballymun, who would recommend clients to us. So we're catching people who may have done a junior cert and then dropped out of school thinking they'd get an apprenticeship or a job, realised they didn't have the qualifications necessary, and they'd come to us then, or they'd be recommended through our local Intrio office or our local employment service in Ballymun as well. So they'd come to us and we'd get them onto a level 4 programme where they could progress to a level 5 to a PLC and then move into further education or employment.
Could I put it to you, Padraig, based on what you've told us so far this morning, that it is my impression that in a lot of ways you are slightly, and Ballark House is slightly ahead of the curve, because somebody recently in the, I think it was the Department of either Education or Department of Employment, Jobs and whatever else you're having yourself, came up with this idea that, oh, maybe we should concentrate on the trades more than what we have been heretofore. And everybody was jumping up and down thinking it was a great idea. But from what you've been telling us this morning, Padraig, you've been doing this all along anyway.
We've always been doing this, and community training projects were never really advertised. We're governed by a local board of management. They're individuals who are made up from the local community who give up their time for free to govern the training centre. We've always gone under the radar, and you know, we used to be FOSS funded, and you know, and people will give FOSS bad press, but FOSS were very good community training. And always funded us, always looked after us. We're now under the Educational Training Boards, and Ballark would be under the City of Dublin Educational Training Boards, which are what the old VECs used to be. But yeah, we were always into the hands-on approach, you know, and we've always prepared people for trades. And trades are something that are either up or down in this country. You know, we're either all over trades, or we actually, you know, trades are taken apart in this country. And during the boom, we had a lot of young people going into trades. The boom, you know, the economy collapsed, trades disappeared, but now trades are starting to come back because we don't have the people. I mean, we don't have enough houses in this country at the moment. We're not building enough units in this country at the moment, and we need tradespeople, you know, to be employed to build these houses. So that's why we're introducing this pre-apprenticeship program now. It's for young people in our locality who won't get a trade because they don't have the relevant qualification or skill set. So what we're trying to do is get them in, deal with other issues they may have, remove some of the barriers to learning they may have around family issues, personal issues, mental health issues, and get them ready to take up a trade. You know, so we will give them kind of skills in a lot of different areas and then move them in. We do the same in catering as well. We bring in young people, and what we kind of deal with over the period of time they have is more the barriers to life that they have. You know, a lot of them might have done nothing for 2 years, will stay in bed. So our first port of call is to try and get them up every morning, get them in on time, have them in for 9 o'clock every day before we do anything around the skill sets, you know, and kind of take an attitude. We'd have an holistic approach. We treat everyone as an individual, where school might be one size fits all. Everyone has to be in at this time. We could get a guy that can only get in at 9:30. So we might make an exception. So we'll go 9:30 for the first month, then 9:15, then, you know, bring him to 9 o'clock. So it's all about trying to get the individual to where we want them. And then we'll have a progression plan for each individual to move them from Ballark into either a PLC, into an apprenticeship, onto further education, and depending on the individual and, you know, their requirements.
Yeah, and of course the old adage in relation to that, Padraig, was when you have a trade you'll never be idle and you'll never go hungry, because you can, once you have that piece of paper to say you're qualified, well, as you say, and as we are finding out now, well, we didn't need to wait until now to find out, but, you know, anybody, or not anybody, but a lot of people who were skilled tradesmen quite simply packed their bags up sticks and left during the Depression, which is why we don't have people now. They've gone abroad. But the point I'm trying to make, I suppose, is that they couldn't have that option would not have been open to them if they didn't have the qualifications and the training, which you are now providing as well. So well done on that front, Padraig, I have to say. And it almost sounds like a throwback to the old technical schools, the techs.
Yeah, it would be. We were derived from the old ANCO. We were ANCO years ago, and then we became community training workshops, and then we went from them into community training centres. But it is a throwback to the old trade schools, and it's what these young people enjoy. They don't have, a lot of these kids don't have the attention spans to sit at a desk all day and, you know, listen to a teacher and behave themselves. And it's not that they're bad kids or they're badly behaved. It just doesn't suit them. school will cover one or two of the different types of intelligences. And a lot of, you know, I think Dave McWilliam said, a lot of very stupid people leave school thinking they're geniuses, and an awful lot of geniuses leave school believing they're very, you know, they're stupid, you know what I mean? And that's what we try to get. We try to get those kids that, you know, and not by default to the schools, you know, the school system is the school system, but these kids just don't fit that. It's like putting a round peg into a square hole. So that's what we're there for. And these kids, when you put a chisel in their hand, or you put a chef's knife in their hand, and you put anything like that, and these kids just find themselves, you know. They find a fit, they find a career, they grow in confidence, you know. And the more little achievements they make, you know, the more confident they feel about themselves. And, you know, and the success stories, as I said, we've had down through the years, and people coming back going, God, before I came to you, I felt like, you know, nothing was going to happen for me. You know, I was never going to have a future. You know, I was never going to have a career. And it's just different pathways, you know.
And, Pádraig, the success that you have been having has not gone unnoticed, because you recently picked up a very impressive award.
Yeah, no. Richard Bruton presented us with an award there on Monday. And, you know, it's great to see, you know, it's great to see the government acknowledge the work that's been done by community training centres. And, you know, the minister himself was very nice. He's actually from our local area. He's not too far from our training centre. And, you know, it's great to see it, because it is necessary. It is a necessity in a community. We have schools, you know, we have other areas, but it's great that we have something to capture those kids that, you know, otherwise would be left go by the wayside, would be left, you know, fall into, you know, bad behaviour, become problems, become, you know, we've taken a lot of students from the probation services, and we've worked with them, you know, they need an arm around the shoulder sometimes, these kids, and you'll find that, you know, you give them that little bit of respect and they'll go through a brick wall for you, you know, and we're hoping that, you know, these kids can take a different pathway in life, that they're not written off at 16 or 17. But it was great for the government to acknowledge that on Monday in Dublin Castle. And, you know, and it's something, he said, Richard Bruton said, it's something he's going to keep an eye on over the next couple of months or next couple of years, or as long as Fine Gael are in power.
Well, I sincerely hope so, and I hope he keeps putting his hand in his pocket. As a matter of interest, Pádraig, just before I let you go, the turnaround period for somebody coming in, now I know it's probably going to vary from trade to trade or from skill to skill, but roughly speaking, how long will somebody that comes into you, how long will they be there?
They'll be there roughly 2 years. But again, you're right, it depends on the individual. We could have someone comes in to us, you know, never did a leaving cert, really want to take up a PLC course, or want to get themselves on the stepping stone to college, so they might need a level 4. And they could come in and say, I have a course starting in September, anyway, I could get a level 4. What we'll do is we'll work our socks off, they might put in an extra hour themselves, and we'll try and get them a level 4. Someone else might come in, and, you know, they mightn't have even done a junior cert. So we'll start with level 3 and we'll work towards the level 4. And over the last couple of years, we've had upwards of 75, 76% progression rate from our training centre onto further education and employment. So it depends, again, you know, not one size fits all in our training centre. We'll have a different approach for every trainer or trainee that comes into us, or every learner that comes into us.
Well, Pádraig, all I can say is well done. It's great to hear success stories, and it's a point I have made regularly here that if it was bad news, everybody would be jumping up and down to bring it to people. But this is a good news story, and we're delighted to bring it to the people. Congratulations on your award, and thank you for joining us on Northside Today.
And that was Donny Tarrant on Northside Today. And finally, on this week's edition of Encore, we're joined by Tony Fitzsimons on Global Solidarity, discussing this year's Trokra campaign.
Trokra has just launched its 44th Trokra Box Appeal. The Lenten Box is Trokra's biggest national appeal, and this year's campaign highlights the scale of humanitarian need across the world. The family pictured on this year's Trokra Box is from a village in Honduras that faces regular flooding from storms and rising sea levels. Trokra's project in the villages keep people safe by providing for safe evacuation while supporting their campaign for access to safer homes. The organisation is continually responding to humanitarian crises around the world, including in South Sudan, where the UN last week declared a famine. Trokra is providing emergency food and water to people in South Sudan, and the nations to this year's Lenten campaign will help the organisation expand its projects aimed at tackling hunger across the region. Miriam Gormley spoke with Owen Rice, Trokra's head of communication, to find out more.
We've launched the Lenten campaign. It's obviously the 44th year of the campaign, so it's well established, and the famous boxes are, a million of them are going around the country over the next couple of weeks. So the theme this year is particularly looking at humanitarian relief. So what we're saying is that we want to deliver humanitarian relief to a million people this year, and we're asking for people's help to allow us to do that. The family on the box this year are from Honduras. They're from a village in the north of Honduras that is suffering from very frequent storms and flooding. And those storms and floods are increasing every year due to the rising sea levels and just generally the worsening climatic conditions there. That northern coast of Honduras is actually the most vulnerable area in the world to climate change related storms. So people there really live in a very difficult situation where every 3 to 4 months they have to evacuate their homes. And we've put in systems and trainings to help them evacuate safely, and we provide materials to get them out of their homes safely. But it's just one example of how we're providing humanitarian aid to people around the world. And so that's the theme this year, and we're asking people to, as they always do, to very generously give us their support and get behind the campaign and enable us to get the aid to people who need it.
Yeah, I mean, but if it's looking at an issue, you know, like climate change or climate security or livelihood security, are they going to need more than just money? I mean, money isn't always going to solve this problem.
Yeah, well, exactly. In that particular instance in Honduras, we provide training and evacuation routes and also material support for them in terms of boats and food and water and things like that. But you're right, ultimately what they need is safe land, because this problem is going to get worse. And so it's a big problem for them and for many people like them that the village that they have always lived in the next 20 years, that village probably won't be there anymore, because the sea is eventually going to take over that land. So we're working with the local community there to campaign to get this, to get them new land, safer land away from the sea. So that's the longer term approach we're taking, that we do ultimately need to give them a longer term security.
What are the opportunities to get new land? I imagine land is becoming increasingly scarce if more of the land is being threatened.
It is, and unfortunately the big problem in Central America is that there's huge inequalities, and so generally the poorer communities don't have access to land. That's particularly true of their indigenous communities. There's huge levels of discrimination, there's huge levels of inequality, and land ownership tends to be concentrated amongst a tiny, tiny percentage of the country. So we see that not just in Honduras, but also in Guatemala, Nicaragua, countries like that. So it's very difficult. Unfortunately, it's not just a case of finding them a fresh plot of land and buying it. It's a lot more complicated over there, and that's why we need to involve government and local officials to try to make it happen. Because, as I said, within 10 years, the village that the Lenten community are in won't be there anymore. Yeah. And they know that, and we know that, and everyone knows that, but it's how do we actually get them out?
And I mean, so how would people's donation to the Trokra boxes help that?
Yeah, well, the donations this year are part of, they're funding our general work. But what specifically in this instance, they will help get aid into that community. So we've trained a number of people in the community basically on how to flag when storms are coming, how to prepare the community, how to gather them together and how to get them out safely. We've dug an escape canal and provided boats so that they can get into these boats quickly and get to safer land. And then when they get there, we provide them with water and food and other equipment like that. But what we also need is support on that more advocacy route, I suppose. So we're working with the community and with local organisations, and we're funding their campaign to try to get more long-term solutions for that community. But donations to Lenten campaign will also provide humanitarian aid around the world. So the other country that we're highlighting this year is South Sudan. There was recently a famine declared in one part of South Sudan. We've been in that country for over 40 years now, so we're well established there and have good networks and good local partners there. So we are responding to that. We're getting in, you know, just very basic food and water materials. That's what the people need at the moment. So donations will also go to that and also to similar programs around the world, because unfortunately there are an unprecedented number of people requiring humanitarian aid. They say there's about 70 million people who'll need food assistance this year, and about 65 million people who are displaced by conflict. So the numbers are incredible, and they really are unprecedented over the last number of decades.
And that was this week's Encore here on Near FM. Encore is back next Sunday from 4 to 4:30 p.m. Bye-bye.